Chapter 15. One afternoon they were climbing the glossy-limbed Chatal tree at the bottom of the garden. Mademoiselle La Riviere and little Lucette, screened by a caprice of the coppice but just within earshot, were playing grace hoops. One glimpsed now and then, above or through foliage, the skimming hoop passing from one unseen sending stick to another. The first cicada of the season kept trying out its instrument. A silver and sable skybab squirrel sat sampling a cone on the back of a bench. Vaughn, in blue gym suit, having worked his way up to a fork just under his agile playmate, who naturally was better acquainted with the tree's intricate map, but not being able to see her face, betokened mute communication by taking her ankle between finger and thumb, as she would have a closed butterfly. Her bare foot slipped, and the two panting youngsters tangled ignominiously among the branches in a shower of droops and leaves, clutching at each other, and the next moment, as they regained a semblance of balance, his expressionless face and cropped head were between her legs, and a last fruit fell with a thud, the dropped dot of an inverted exclamation point. She was wearing his wristwatch and a cotton frock. "Remember?"
"Yes, of course I remember. You kissed me there, on the inside."
"And you started to strangle me with those devilish knees of yours.
I was seeking some sort of support."
That might have been true, but according to a later, considerably later, version, they were still in the tree and still glowing, when Vaughn removed a silk thread of larva web from his lip and remarked that such negligence of attire was a form of hysteria.
"Well," answered Ada, straddling her favorite limb, "as we all know by now, Mademoiselle La Riviere de Diamant has nothing against a hysterical little girl's not wearing pantalettes during l'ardeur de la canicule.
I refuse to share the ardor of your little canicule with an apple tree."
"It is really the tree of knowledge. This specimen was imported last summer, wrapped up in brocade from the Eden National Park, where Dr. Krolik's son is a ranger and breeder."
"Let him range and breed by all means," said Vaughn. Her natural history had long begun to get on his nerves. "But I swear no apple trees grow in Iraq."
"Right? But that's not a true apple tree."
"Right and wrong," commented Ada, again much later.
"We did discuss the matter. But you could not have permitted yourself such vulgar repartees then. At a time when the chastest of chances allowed you to snatch, as they say, a first shy kiss?
Oh, for shame. And besides, there was no national park in Iraq 80 years ago." "True," said Vaughn. "And no caterpillars bred on that tree in our orchard."
"True, my lovely and larvaless."
Natural history was past history by that time. Both kept diaries. Soon after that foretaste of knowledge, an amusing thing happened. She was on her way to Krolik's house with a box full of hatched and chloroformed butterflies, and had just passed through the orchard when she suddenly stopped and swore, "Chort!" At the same moment, Vaughn, who had set out in the opposite direction for a bit of shooting practice in a nearby pavilion, where there was a bowling alley and other recreational facilities once much used by other Veens, also came to an abrupt standstill. Then, by a nice coincidence, both went tearing back to the house to hide their diaries, which both thought they had left lying open in their respective rooms. Ada, who feared the curiosity of Lucette and Blanche, the governess presented no threat, being pathologically unobservant, found out she was wrong. She had put away the album with its latest entry. Vaughn, who knew that Ada was a little snoopy, discovered Blanche in his room, feigning to make the made bed, with the unlocked diary lying on the stool beside it. He slapped her lightly on the behind and removed the chagrin-bound book to a safer place. Then Vaughn and Ada met in the passage and would have kissed at some earlier stage of the novel's evolution in the history of literature,
It might have been a neat little sequel to the Chatal tree incident. Instead, both resumed their separate ways, and Blanche, I suppose, went to weep in her bower.